From the land of towering mountains, the Yellowstone River, and the Roosevelt Arch, this is This Week in Yellowstone for the week of January 23rd to January 29th, 2025. This week in Yellowstone National Park, I take a look at the rumors of an imminent eruption, tell you about a new species that some want to introduce to Yellowstone, discuss the coyote mating season, and, as always, share the weather forecast, the road conditions, and wildlife spotting locations. This is a good one, so give it a listen. I mean, you already are. Alright, quickly, my standard disclaimer. I may miss a few things and not cover some topics you'd like, but if there's anything you wish to know, please contact me, like seriously. And if I refer to locations in the park too casually, this is just something that I'm going to do. If you need to know where things are, you can contact me or just search for those names. Just jot them down and look them up later. Also, please note that this is a weekly report for the drivable regions of the park and doesn't cover any of the experiences you may have if you're taking a snow coach or snowmobile tour that goes into the interior. So if you have questions about those adventures and regions, contact those tour operators. They should be able to give you a lot of information, and if they don't, then maybe try and find a better tour operator. This week's Yellowstone news, everybody's favorite section. This is a good one. I'm happy to talk about this. So once again, it's been a slow news week out in Yellowstone, which, you know, I think it's a good thing. We don't really want a lot of newsworthy events taking place. This is a place of beauty and should be something positive. And most news stories that come out of national parks, I think we can agree, aren't really positive or inspiring. So since it's a slow week, I'm going to be briefly covering a few topics from the last few months and even like last year that I didn't get a chance to talk about anywhere else. So we're going to start with the ever-present news of Yellowstone's imminent eruption. This is constantly on all the clickbait articles. Yellowstone is going to erupt, or is Yellowstone going to erupt, or some stupid like title of something to try and make you fearful or interested in an eruption. I get asked this also a lot on my tours, and I figured I'd address it here. So according to a quote in National Parks Traveler from Ninfa Barrington, a USGS geologist, "There is no possibility of current day eruptions happening at Yellowstone." They go on to say that the magma pockets in the western portion of the caldera do not have the heat to sustain volcanic activity, and that the amount of magma in the caldera is far below previous estimates, which were first said to be near levels before the last major eruption, so they're way less than that right now. Now, we recently saw an uptick of news about an imminent eruption because some people saw some information and decided to run with it. The information was that there are increases in pockets of magma near the northeast corner of the caldera. Bennington, who I referred to earlier, has said that the current magma concentration in the lobe, that's that little spoon, if you think of like, I don't know why I'm going with this analogy, it makes no sense, but instead of Edward Scissorhands, Edward Spoon Hands, and each of the fingers is a spoon, that's the lobe. Very dumb analogy. So each of those lobes is too small to be able to host a present-day eruption. So if you're rooting for a Yellowstone eruption anytime soon, you won't be in luck at all. What's interesting is that northeast corner of the caldera is out near the canyon and Mount Washburn region. So that's just an interesting thing. I do some tours out by Mount Washburn through Norris Hot Springs, or not Norris, through Washburn Hot Springs. And that area has some really cool thermal features and really stinky ones. And so it's just interesting to know that those are being fed by a little bit more magma than in previous decades, centuries, whatever, but not enough for an eruption. Again, no imminent eruption. The second news story that I've been waiting and wanting to share for so long is like truly wild. I initially heard about it while getting my haircut, and I assumed it was just misheard information. It's like, so the person that cuts my hair does not peddle gossip. They talk a lot of fun things and tell good stories to me and talk to a lot of different people. And so they heard this and I was like, well, that's interesting, but I don't really know if that's true. This is a real story. So hold on. So here's the headline from the Cowboy State Daily newspaper in Wyoming. Woolly mammoths in Yellowstone. Biotech company says it has the technology. So in brief, because I could talk about this for hours on end, the article discusses Colossal Biosciences. A few years back, the company surprised many by committing to resurrecting the woolly mammoth by 2028. After years of research, Colossal believes it has the technology to bring back the extinct species by creating viable hybrid calves of mammoths and modern elephants. So here's a quote from Ben Lamb, the CEO and co-founder of the Colossal Daily, as told to Cowboy State Daily. We believe we are currently on track for a 2028 birthing. We recently were able to create an elephant iPSCs, which are stem cells, that is a global world first breakthrough and a significant step toward our woolly mammoth project. Colossal is also in the editing in the elephant cell phase of the project and is leveraging the knowledge gained from the computational analysis of our now 60 mammoth genomes. So, butchered that a little bit, but basically the science is sciencing according to them. Which brings to the question and why I'm talking about this in Yellowstone. So where were the mammoths roam? Many are looking toward Yellowstone. There's a ton of research why I doubt this will happen. Obviously, there weren't really mammoths roaming through Yellowstone. It wasn't quite the ecosystem at the time when mammoths were roaming, but supposedly it's better now for them than it was. But Yellowstone probably isn't the ideal space if it were to occur. And all of this is very eye-rolling to me. I mean, I have so much to say about this, but instead I'm just going to end this here and tell you that if you're interested in the story, just search for Mammoth Reintroduction Yellowstone on your favorite search engine, and you're going to see both serious news sites and not serious news sites covering this. There are people that legitimately want to see mammoths roaming around to the point that some wolf researchers were talking about this to people in the greater Yellowstone community as a fear of what would happen. So this isn't just some fun, weird thing. It's actually something that people are talking about. So I figured I'd talk about it too. All right, that's enough of that. So the experience of the week. Wolf and coyote mating season is here. And this week I'll talk about the coyote mating season as you're far more likely to see them in their courtship routines than a wolf. Next week I'll talk about wolf mating season. So the mating season typically unfolds between the months of January and March and has a lot of vocalization occurring from coyotes all across the landscape. So female coyotes go through estrus once a year and only once. And that cycle spans approximately 10 days, so 10 days a year. And any attempts by a male to breed with any of the unready female are met with rejection and threats until the right time arrives. So growling, barking, yipping, and even whimpering is how the female communicates her disinterest, making it abundantly clear to the male coyote that she wants to be left alone. And during mating season, male coyotes produce sperm exclusively aligning with that limited window, so they can only mate a certain time of year as well. It's important to note that while coyotes are generally monogamous, which is something I didn't know until I was researching this, some males may experience frustration if a female isn't quite ready for mating. In response, these males may go on the prowl, seeking a receptive mate elsewhere. However, the alpha male will eventually return to his original mate once she reaches optimal readiness, maintaining the monogamous dynamics within the coyote pack. And once both parties are ready to mate, the coyote pairs engage in the physical dance of mating, is how I wrote that. This act seals their bond and starts the beginning of the partnership that then they will have to take care of their offspring. So where can you see coyotes in Yellowstone during mating season? Coyotes can and are often found in every corner of the park. During their mating season, there's only one section of the road that's open for personal vehicles in the park, and that's between Gardner and Silvergate Cook City. I talk about this a lot in my wildlife watching guidebook that if you want to pick up a copy, you can. But realistically, if you stop at Blacktail Ponds, around Hell Roaring, Tower Roosevelt, Little America, Lamar Valley, Soda Butte Creek, and Pebble Creek Round Prairie, you're probably going to be able to see a coyote at one time throughout the day. As always, don't approach wildlife. Stay at the appropriate distance from all animals and never stop directly in the road. You're going to hear that a lot from me. So once mating season is over, what happens? The gestation period for coyotes is roughly 60 days, during which females seek out secluded dens to birth their pups. And then the timing of the mating season ensures that the arrival of the new lines are right there around spring, which is when more food source will be available. The time when they're born also happens to be the time when some of those Uinta ground squirrels emerge from hibernation, which are a huge source of food. And while the mating season brings vibrancy to Yellowstone, please maintain a respectful distance from all wildlife, including these coyotes. You don't want to have a coyote get too habitualized to humans and then be responsible if it ends up dying. So keep your distance, watch them mate, maybe, or don't, you know, it's up to you. So the tip of the week. For regulars of the park, this is well-known knowledge, but for those visiting for the first time, this information is quite important. It's in relation to wildlife watching. One of the bigger complaints I hear while giving tours this time of the year is that people aren't seeing the amount of wildlife they were hoping for. I can admit that it can be quite frustrating to head to the park in hopes to see lots of wildlife and instead see very little. This happens to me all the time too. And while it is true that some days are like that and there's nothing you can do, quite often I find that for some people, it's not that there's a lack of animals that's a problem, it's the lack of understanding on how to spot them. So the easiest way to see wildlife in Yellowstone this time of year is to drive back and forth between Mammoth and Cook City a few times. Do it once in the morning, once at lunchtime, and once in the evening. If there's something to be seen, you're going to stand a good chance of seeing it. The other time-tested method for seeing wildlife is also very simple. It's stop anytime you see people looking through spotting scopes or binoculars. And sure, oftentimes they'll be scanning in hopes to see something, but sometimes they're actually looking at an animal. And if you see a tour group stopped looking through spotting scopes, stop and ask what they're looking at. Like, just hop out of your car, park appropriately, walk up, and when there is time, just ask. If they don't tell you, this is what I have written down, if they don't tell you, they are jerks. Seriously. Gatekeeping wildlife sightings is a dumb thing to do in Yellowstone National Park, and if a tour group does this to you, let me know which one it was. I will happily talk to them. I should say that when you are approaching a tour group, be patient. Don't just run up there and start asking questions. Kind of hang back, and then if the guide appears to be free, then just ask a question. More than likely, they're going to be very happy to help you. Also, don't assume that you can look through their spotting scopes. If they offer, great, but don't ask. It's just, you know, they have paid clients and that's what they're paying for. So they don't have to allow you to look through their scopes or binoculars, but they should be more than willing to point out where the animal is, especially if you have your own set of binoculars or a spotting scope. So the weather for this week. Let's start with the weather forecast for Lamar Valley. High temperatures from Thursday through the weekend will be in the teens and low 20s with lows below zero, plunging all the way down to negative 16 on Saturday. By the start of next week, highs are going to get around 30 degrees with lows in the single digits. There is a chance of snow on Friday with current totals saying an inch or a little more. For Cook City, the forecast looks very similar, with Saturday looking like there will be a high of 13 and a low of negative 10. It should also snow an inch or two in Cook City. It will, like Lamar, start warming up once the next week starts. Warming up out there means highs in the 20s and 30s. So in Gardner, expect highs in the upper teens and 20s through the weekend, with lows around zero on Friday and Sunday. Saturday currently says a low of negative 9, so that'll be fun. Monday could see the high starting to creep above freezing with a low of 10. The next few days after Monday are supposed to be a couple degrees warmer. Potentially by next week's report, we could see highs in the upper 30s, even 40s. So the forecast I'm using is as of Wednesday, January 22nd. It may be colder than the temperature I listed. It may also be warmer. I do my best, guys. Snowpack update. The snowpack has dropped a little since last week. That's to be expected. It didn't snow. So the northwestern side of the park is currently 100% of normal, while the western side is around 85. The interior, northern, and eastern side of the park is hovering around 75% of normal. Without a lot of snow in the forecast, so no snow in the forecast aside from that like inch or two, I expect these numbers to stay the same, maybe even drop a little bit. And with snow comes road conditions. So the roads this week will be standard winter driving. Most of the park roads are going to have some snow on them or in the process of melting out here and there. But if they're melting out during the day, they're going to freeze at night. So that means there might be some patches of ice, especially in the morning hours. They're not going to be like the most ideal roads, but the park's going to continue to plow them as best they can and take care of any spots that are needed. I would say that if you're headed out toward the northeast entrance, that's where you're going to find more less than ideal roadways with more snow and potentially more ice. And please use the pullouts if you're the slow car and causing a backup, and never ever stop on the road, even if there's an animal you want to take a picture of close to the road. Also, I am a broken record with this, but please drive slow and safe. I've once again seen numerous cars off the road every single day I drive in the park. If you want up-to-date information, you can get that via text by texting the number 82190 to the number 888-777, or you can call area code 307-344-2117 for road conditions. All right, camping information. Don't know how many people are going to be camping. My guess is very few, but there is only one campground open right now, and that's Mammoth. And there's no real amenities there, so unless you're experienced in winter camping in the Rocky Mountains and have all the gear needed and a thirst for adventure, don't camp this week. It's not going to be fun. Wildlife watching is probably what a lot of you want to hear, and it's been a decent last week. So as we get deeper into winter, animals continue to be on the move toward the lower lands and areas where grass can still be found. That means the bison, elk, and the remaining pronghorn have been making their way closer to Mammoth. That's going to be an area you can see more of those wildlife sightings, especially if you drive the old Yellowstone Road north out of Gardner. The story of last week was the wolves, which moved from Slough Creek to Hell Roaring, and they even hung out right by Tower Junction for a day. Some professional photographers got some great pictures of the wolves crossing the road and generally being just 100 yards away, looking right at the people. Fantastic pictures and a great day for people that got to see that. And as of Tuesday, the 21st, spotters were able to see wolves down out in the Hell Roaring area. So if you go to Upper Hell Roaring Overlook and look down, there should be some cars out there. How long they're going to be there is anyone's guess. They supposedly have a kill, but if they've been eating in the last few days, then there's not much left. So coyotes have also been all over the place. Keep your eyes open for them. We also saw a fox near Cook City. And pygmy owls have been spotted through the northern range, as have bald eagles and golden eagles. Elsewhere in the park, there was another cool sighting that happened last week where mountain lions were spotted way up in the mountains, visible through spotting scopes above Round Prairie near Pebble Creek. The moose have also been hanging around Pebble Creek, but they're either in the trees or out in the distance as of late. Hiking news and updates. There's not a lot to report on the trails of the park this week. I think I said this last week, but being winter, you need snowshoes and cross-country skis to pretty much do anything outside. If you are walking the boardwalks at Mammoth, use traction devices. It's still pretty slick up there. And then the trek of the week. I teased it in the first episode of the year, but this week I really am recommending the Pebble Creek Canyon. This is a short jaunt, it's easy to do, it's flat, and it's located near the Pebble Creek campground, which is closed. You can park near the pit toilet at Pebble Creek and then walk the path to the right of the closed gate. While you shouldn't need snowshoes or even traction devices, I would still have traction devices in a pack just in case. You're going to be walking directly on a frozen creek with some snow on it, so it could be slick. Just as a heads up for future use, if you're listening to this way after the date, If the weather is warm, like over 40 degrees in January or February, I'd be very careful with the thickness of the ice here. I have punched through in ice, and it's not fun, so I don't recommend doing it on a warm day. The trek is simple to do, as it gains no real elevation, as I said, and it follows the creek upstream for about a half mile. For that half mile, you're going to go beneath huge cliffs, next to frozen cascades, and through a narrow canyon that few people see. At the turnaround point, which is not really an official turnaround point, but you can't go much further up, you're going to reach a really cool cave along the frozen creek. If the ice is strong enough, meaning that you can see tracks from other people that have gone across the ice, definitely head into that small cave and enjoy the cool experience. The whole trek is about a mile total, and it's perfect for a lunch jaunt or a quick leg stretch. It will be cold. There's not a lot of sun that gets in that canyon, which is why it freezes over and why you're able to walk it on ice. Finally, the last two things are about booking a tour and picking up a guidebook. Since I am recording this, I am just quickly going to plug that I offer trail tours in Yellowstone all year round. They are private hiking and snowshoe tours that go to all of these places that I truly love, focusing on wildlife, scenic vistas, calm, serene moments, and even moonrise tours when the full moon is rising at a decent hour. So if you're interested in that, feel free to reach out to me directly or check out my current guided hiking options at outdoor-society.com. If you'd rather hike on your own or wildlife watch on your own, you can pick up one of my guidebooks. I have two guidebooks. One is wildlife watching and the other is hiking in the region. Both are available at my store that you can find at outdoor-society.com. All right, that is the end of this week's episode. It is, again, a fun winter time to visit. If you are visiting and just need any tips or advice, please let me know. Happy to help out. And if you see anything cool, want something covered, have any questions, again, reach out to me. I'm definitely more than willing to go into some weird tangents or deeper areas of the park if people are interested. So until next week, have fun, and I hope to see you out in Yellowstone. Bye. This Week in Yellowstone is brought to you by the Outdoor Society, because that's my company, and that's where this is hosted. There are no sponsors, there's no ad breaks, this is a labor of love, so thank you all for listening. Copyright 2025, baby!